Welcome to the Optimum Nutrition Podcast, brought to you by the Institute for Optimum Nutrition. ION is one of Europe's longest established nutritional therapy training providers. Our aim is to support people in making a positive impact on their lives with food. I'm Alice Ball, Communications Officer at ION. Each week, I'm going to be interviewing a guest from the world of nutrition. We'll be delving into their health journey and touching on some common health conditions, with the aim of inspiring you to be your most optimally healthy and happiest self. I'm delighted to be joined by Lanice Brothers for today's episode. Lanice is a registered nutritional therapist and yoga teacher on a mission to help people to have a better period. Today, she dispels some of the common myths around periods, including whether pain and cramping is normal. She also discusses the four stages of the menstrual cycle and how we can use nutrition and lifestyle to harness the benefits of each stage and enjoy a happier period. This is a fantastic episode, not only for those who menstruate, but for those who want to better understand the menstrual cycle. As always, if you enjoy the episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. To find out more about how nutritional therapy could help you, visit ion.ac.uk. But for now, please enjoy Lanice Brothers on the Optimum Nutrition Podcast. Lanice Brothers, welcome to the Optimum Nutrition Podcast.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Very welcome. I always begin by asking our guests to name their top three kitchen essentials. So these are three ingredients that you always have in your fridge or cupboards and you just can't live without.
Okay, great question. Oh, this is a hard one. So I would say first one has to be kimchi. I am obsessed. Unfortunately, I don't make my own yet. And I know it's easy to make because my clients make it. And then they tell me that the recipe I've given them has been really easy, but I just don't do it myself. So that's the first one. Second one would have to be my spice cabinet. I really rely on spices. And one of my biggest pet peeves is when you go to restaurants and the food is bland because it's just like, I mean, there's a world of spices. There's no reason for food to be bland.
We're having the entire spice cabinet.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to choose, my most used spices have to be cumin, coriander, salt and pepper, za'atar, which I love.
Great one, yeah.
And then oregano and basil.
All good ingredients. So then what would your final ingredient be?
This is really tricky. Probably lemons. I just love you when you're throwing together, like it's salad season, you're throwing together a salad, you add your dressing, but then you add a bit of extra lemon for a bit of zing. But then, you know, you can cut up a lemon and put it with a chicken when you're roasting it. You can throw lemon rinds in a chili when you cook it, preserve lemon. So yeah, that's kind of my last one. Great question.
And that's probably the best response we've had so far on the podcast. So now, Lanice, can you explain for people what you do and kind of the different areas you work with?
Yeah, so I am a nutritional therapist specializing in women's health. So that basically means that I talk about periods a lot. Menstrual cycle, hormones, not just sex hormones, but all hormones, which actually surprises a lot of people because, you know, the focus is so much on estrogen and progesterone, but all hormones really come into play. So periods, hormones, menstrual cycles, that's kind of my focus and what I do and what I talk to my clients about on a day-to-day basis.
And now you've not always worked in nutrition, have you? So you worked in advertising for a number of years. What made you want to completely reroute your career and go and retrain?
So I, as you say, I worked in advertising for 15 years. I absolutely loved it, was really passionate about what I did. But by the end of my time working full time, because I did freelance while I was studying, I was just starting to feel burnt out. And I was traveling a lot, managing teams in different locations. And it was this kind of typical corporate life of surviving on coffee to wake me up, using red wine to unwind the evening. I was really burnt out, really, really burnt out. And I was starting to think about what my next move was. But at that time, it was what my next move was going to be within advertising. But then I got pregnant, and this was planned. So it wasn't one of those happy accidents. And then my mind started going towards thinking, well, actually, can I still do this and be the mother that I want to be? And of course, that could be a whole other question of like, why did I have to make that choice?
Yeah.
But that was where my mind was going. And then I went on maternity leave and I had a really bad experience with the company I worked with. And I just decided that I wasn't going to go back. And I decided to retrain. I went and I studied at CNM. So I did it part-time because I still had to earn money.
Mm.
And I did it the weekend program, worked 4 days a week, had one day off to be day off, I'd say quote unquote, because I was with my son.
Yeah.
And I had always been really interested in health and starting to study nutrition, like I felt like I was in the right place. It was really hard for sure. Like I don't underplay the challenge of studying and what learning all this new material because I don't come from a science background at all. But it was so interesting and I was able to push through because I had always had this interest in health and well-being. I was a person in my friend group that people would always go to ask questions about health because I was always reading all of these different books. And then when I was studying, the lecturers always said, you've got to specialize. Some people will be Jack or Jill of all trades, but people like to know that they can go to people for specific issues. And so I originally was thinking that I would specialize in gut health because I still find it fascinating. And I had dealt with anxiety and depression for a long time. So I found it so interesting, the connection with the gut. But then I started thinking, well, actually, what about menstrual health? Wouldn't that be so interesting? Because at the time in the UK, there weren't that many people specializing in menstrual health. So I decided to do that. And then when I graduated, I stopped freelancing straight away and jumped right in because I thought I might as well just go the full hog, do this all the way, and then just see what happens.
So if we talk about the menstrual cycle, so that is your specialism. When you were growing up, what were you taught in school, if anything, about periods?
Yeah, I wasn't really taught very much. So I'm Canadian and I grew up in Toronto. And here we have PSHME, but in Canada's health, we had health class. And in health class, it was very much about how not to get pregnant. So it was sex education, putting a condom in a banana, and then, you know, oh, you get a period once a month, use tampons or use pads. And that was pretty much that. And my education was very cursory, if that. And I had to learn a lot of it myself. I had really terrible periods from the very beginning. And I just thought that was normal because I saw what my mom was going through, what my maternal grandmother went through. And I just thought, well, I guess that's just part of having a period. And it was only as I got older and I saw my friends who just, some of them would just breeze through, like it was nothing. And then I started to understand that, oh, actually, what I was experiencing was not normal.
And did your own studies, did that kind of open your eyes to, oh, this is how everything works?
Kind of. I mean, I had already been doing a lot of reading around it. And I had really done a lot of work to change my period. It was a lot of trial and error. But then when I was studying, they talked about the four phases of a menstrual cycle. And for me, that was just like, what? I had no idea. I mean, when I was trying to get pregnant, that's when I started learning about ovulation. I mean, I always feel strange when I talk about this, but I feel like others will relate. For years, I thought that like what I know now is cervical fluid, when that would change throughout the cycle, I thought there was something wrong with me. I thought, you know, what is this fluid? Like, do I have a yeast infection? And then it was only when I was trying to get pregnant and I learned about ovulation and I learned about all of this that I realized that this is completely normal. And then when I was studying, we didn't study a huge amount because there was so much to learn. But when we did talk specifically about reproduction and the four phases of the menstrual cycle, it was mind-blowing.
Yeah, you're probably not alone in that. I mean, there was a research study by WaterAid in 2018, and it found that 1 in 8 women didn't know about periods until they started menstruating. And about a third of women surveyed said they wouldn't feel comfortable talking about the menstrual cycle with anyone. So it does appear that there is this stigma and lack of knowledge around, as you say, these four different stages.
Yeah, absolutely. It's lack of knowledge. It's even the vocabulary, you know. We have a period and then we have a menstrual cycle. And I hear a lot of women calling their period or the time when they menstruate their cycle. And even that education is important because when you understand that your cycle is much more than your period, you're able to see the different changes that happen to you along the way. You know, changes in your energy, your libido, your mood, even like cognition, concentration, memory. And that's really valuable because you can then think about your work, think about your social life, and think about how you relate to the world a little bit differently, not going from this expectation that you're going to feel the same every day to an understanding and even a little bit of tenderness towards yourself to know that, okay, I'm coming up towards my period. If I have to take things a little slowly, it's okay. It's okay.
This is what I was going to ask, actually, because there will be lots of popular sanitary product adverts out there who perhaps paint the idea that as long as you're wearing a tampon or you're wearing a pad, you can crack through your period, no problem. You don't need to change your behavior. Nothing has to be any different. Wear white jeans. But is this necessarily true? Or should we actually be adapting our behavior to fit around our menstrual cycle?
So it's an interesting one because we have this cultural programming that we're supposed to feel bad when we have our period. And we're supposed to be quote unquote PMSing. And, you know, I had an interesting discussion a couple of weeks ago about the fact that, you know, premenstrual syndrome. So a syndrome is a collection of different symptoms. And within PMS, there are over 100 different symptoms. And so we have this expectation that we're supposed to feel bad, but it's not necessarily true. Your energy will decline as you go towards the end of your menstrual cycle and you go certainly in the first day or two of your period, because that's the connection with estrogen. But then you're not necessarily going to be flat out. You know, you will go slower. And that's, you know, your body saying, okay, I've built up this lining over the past however many days. It's time to shed this lining. That is a big energetic process. But you're not going to be through the floor. But equally, you shouldn't expect that, you know, you're going to be wearing, you know, if you want to wear white jeans, wear white jeans. But, you know, you're going to be kind of sailing through life with the same energy that you would when you're ovulating.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of idea of recalibrating your energy and your expectations yourself based on where you are in your menstrual cycle.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like getting in touch with your body and just seeing how you feel and not having this expectation that you've got to be all out or in bed with a hot water bottle.
Yeah, exactly. And I love what you said there, feel what you feel. And I say that a lot in my yoga classes. Feel what you feel, acknowledge what you feel, and don't feel like you have to push away what you're feeling because we have this expectation that we're supposed to feel the same every day of our menstrual cycle.
What does a normal period look like?
This is an interesting one because we have what's normal and what's common, and the two don't necessarily link. So what I would say is normal is a period that lasts between 3 and 7 days. that your energy, you're not completely depleted, that you can go about your daily life, but you probably are taking things a little slower. Maybe you're going to bed a bit earlier. Maybe you're not necessarily pushing yourself as hard in the gym. You're just doing kind of gentle walks, maybe a bit of swimming, maybe some light yoga, certainly on the first 2 days of your period. There might be some light cramping. Maybe you feel a little bit tender physically, maybe emotionally, but you're not doubled over in pain. You're not vomiting. You don't have diarrhea. You don't have constipation. Maybe your bowels are a little bit looser, but you're not kind of stuck on the toilet with diarrhea. And then the normal period also means that emotionally, you kind of, you're feeling what you feel. You know that your estrogen is at its lowest point. Your progesterone is at its lowest point. So there's a kind of tenderness that you have to allow for yourself to not get through, but to feel during these first, again, I emphasize the first 2 days because those are the days where many of us, we really feel what's happening during menstruation.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say is normal. You know, in terms of flow, you're kind of changing whatever you use every couple of hours. You know, if you use a menstrual cup, maybe you're changing it every 4 or 5 hours. It's not every half an hour. It's not every hour. There's a kind of evenness to the flow.
Yeah.
And you're not getting a lot of spotting in the run-up to your period. Maybe you get a bit of spotting just before it starts, but it's not like 3 to 4 days of spotting.
And then you mentioned that that's what's normal, but then you mentioned what's common. So what is sort of these common expectations around our period?
Common expectations are that we're supposed to be in a lot of pain, relying on painkillers, cuddled over a hot water bottle, feeling completely depleted, eating loads of chocolate, being like an emotional wreck. That's kind of what we see in popular culture. That's why I hear all the time. I just had an email yesterday from someone saying they heard me on another podcast and I was answering this exact question and they had no idea because they thought what they were experiencing, which was the pain, the diarrhea, the bloating, was completely normal. You know, people are surprised that what we eat can make such a difference to not only our periods, but how we feel throughout our menstrual cycle. And anyone listening to this hopefully knows the power of food, but it stands to reason that if we're eating 3 meals a day, that what we eat in those 3 meals will have either a positive or negative effect on the way that we feel. And what you add in, because my approach is very much about adding rather than subtracting, because I find that we spend so much time restricting ourselves, thinking about how we can make ourselves smaller. And I don't want that to persist with my clients. So I say it's not cutting out gluten, cutting out sugar, cutting out dairy. Yes, that can be beneficial, but I don't start with that. It's always, let's look at what you're eating now. What can we add in? If you're not eating breakfast, let's talk about that. Let's talk about how you feel. Let's talk about maybe what we can add in the morning to, you know, support your cortisol levels, to support your energy. And then we build from there. So food is a really powerful way to change the menstrual cycle, to change the period. Then we look at sleep as a foundation. How are you sleeping? It's not just about quantity. It's also about quality. We look at movement, getting outside, making sure that you're getting enough vitamin D. Vitamin D has such a massive effect on period pain. And if there's any deficiency, you know, that can affect those of us with period pain. And then social connection, you know, that's not something that's talked a lot about in this space, but feeling connected to others, feeling connected to the community is really important. And then finally, supplements. And supplements are an interesting one because sometimes you have to start there first. You know, if someone is really depleted and they, you know, that it will make a difference really quickly, you just start with supplements and then you build the rest around it. But you kind of have to take all of this on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah. So let's firstly go on to them before we get nitty-gritty into the food. Can you explain these four phases of the menstrual cycle for me?
So day one of your cycle starts on day one of your period. And the first phase is the menstrual phase. So that's however many days your period is. This is where you're energetically going to feel, certainly in the first part of this, your lowest. Your estrogen is low, your progesterone is low. And this is where you really want to nurture yourself. I mentioned this idea of tenderness. This is where it's really important to kind of turn in and give yourself this time to look after yourself. Then you go on to the next phase, which is the follicular phase. And just a little sidebar, when you speak to doctors, some doctors, they split the cycle into two parts. So it's follicular, we're covering menstrual and follicular, and then luteal, covering ovulation, and then the luteal phase. So that's just something to bear in mind if you're listening to this and thinking, well, that's not the way that my doctor has spoken to me about it. But I find that splitting it into these four phases is really valuable because it allows you to have a deeper look at what's happening to you throughout your menstrual cycle. So the follicular phase, or what some people call as the inner spring, is when you feel the effects of rising estrogen. So you feel that increased energy. And when estrogen is rising, so are our neurotransmitters like serotonin in the brain, dopamine, acetylcholine, all of these other neurotransmitters that connect with increased cognition, better communication skills, better memory. And so this is the time where your energy is rising. You start to feel like you can move out into the world a bit more. You're feeling more social. You're feeling more plugged in to what's going on around you. From a movement perspective, this is the time where testosterone is also rising. So if gaining muscle mass or strength building is a focus, this is the time where you will be able to lift heavier. Or if you're doing, like, I'm a yoga teacher, so I noticed that in this phase, I can do longer holds, and poses like crow or crane are much, much easier because I can have this more of the strength to hold them longer.
Yeah.
And then you move into ovulation. So this is a kind of midway point through our cycle. It's not always day 14. It depends on the length of your menstrual cycle, but it's always not always exactly halfway. So I like to look at the as ovulation is more of a phase covering about 5 days, because this also takes into consideration the rise and the peak of progesterone, which happens when you ovulate. And this is our inner summer. This is the time where we're going to feel our best. Most of us, you know, there are some people who, when they ovulate, like those people with PMDD, they don't feel great at all. But for the majority of us, this is the time where our energy is at our peak. We look great. So that peak of estrogen affects the skin. We look, it's more glowing. Our hair looks great. Biologically speaking, our body wants us out there and ready to procreate.
Yeah.
And so just before ovulation, you have that peak of estrogen. And then ovulation happens, progesterone is rising, and then it peaks about 5 to 7 days after you ovulate. And what's great about progesterone is that it's our calming hormone. So it kind of tamps down that kind of fizzy energy that you might feel in the follicular phase. And this is the time where you notice that you start to go towards things that you already know. So the kind of calming energy, you're out in the world, but it's a kind of more centered feeling.
Mm.
And then if you don't fertilize that egg, you then move into the luteal phase. And this is where we kind of have to move against this cultural programming that we have, that at the end of the luteal phase, like 5 to 7 days before your period, you're going to feel bad.
Mm.
You know, it's not inevitable. I talked about energy a lot. You might feel lower energy. You might feel hungrier, but you're not necessarily going to be this kind of raging emotional chocolate monster. You know, it just doesn't have to be like that. And I feel like people listening to this will connect with this push against like health issues being inevitable.
Mm.
But this is the time where certainly towards the end of the cycle, estrogen will be gradually declining. And when estrogen is declining, you have also have this decline in some of the neurotransmitters like serotonin. And this is where some of us might feel some of those emotional symptoms. I don't like to use this word symptoms because it's okay to feel a bit emotional.
Like, yeah,
it's fine, you know, feel what you feel. But you might feel that you do feel things a bit more. You might have cravings. But again, the cravings are a sign for the body that there is some sort of need. So I mentioned chocolate. That's the obvious one where your body's saying, well, actually, I need to replace some of this serotonin that is dropping because of the tryptophan in chocolate, or I need more magnesium because of the magnesium in chocolate. But then if you have salt cravings, that's where you might think, well, maybe I need to look at either adding a bit more salt in my food, like sea salt, Himalayan sea salt, or maybe I need to look at adding a bit more potassium to get that sodium-potassium balance right. So that's a kind of inner autumn. So I like to overlay the analogy of the seasons on top because people tend to connect with that more than the follicular phase.
Yeah, it's a bit biological, isn't it? And when you're looking at yourself and what stage you're at, the seasons just make it that little bit easier to think, okay, I'm at this point right now. What are my needs? What are my requirements?
Yeah, exactly.
So when it comes to food then, is there some things that you would recommend as like a constant throughout the month, no matter what stage you're at?
Yeah. So I would say that with my clients, I like to take them through what I call the balance plate and get them to think of it at like a tick list when they're putting their meals together. So how much protein are they eating? Because I find that generally women are not eating enough protein. And this isn't saying, you know, you have to take a kind of like must eat loads of protein to build muscles sort of approach. But protein is so satiating. You have the amino acids, which are so valuable for so many different systems and organs in the body. So making sure you're eating enough protein, making sure you're eating enough fat, because fat is so important for making hormones like estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, cortisol, and then the fiber, and then the greens. So it's not looking at protein, fat, carbohydrates, but looking at more like fiber and greens to really get people out of this mindset of carbs. Because carbs, you and I know that carbohydrates are just chains of sugar, but carbs have been so demonized. And when you say to people, well, fruits and vegetables are carbohydrates, it just blows their minds. So I like to like take that approach as a constant throughout the cycle to make sure that my clients are eating enough, because that's another issue. People not eating enough, but eating enough of the foods that are really satiating, that will balance their blood sugar levels, make sure they have enough of those building blocks to make enough hormones to support the liver, to do all of the amazing things that it does, including detoxifying hormones, to support the gut and the estrobilome, which is where we break down estrogen in the gut. we then look at, well, what are the things that we then need to add in to support what's happening at each point of the menstrual cycle?
Yeah, so is that sort of like laying the foundations, and then there's bits that you can fine tune along each stage?
Yeah, exactly.
So if we take each stage sort of one by one, let's start with when you're actually on your period. So in this winter stage, what are the things that we want to be focusing on?
I think the obvious one is really looking at iron. Iron is a really interesting one because we see so much iron deficiency, but we also need to make sure that when we're looking at iron, we're making sure that we're also looking at copper, because you need to be eating enough copper so that your body can utilize the iron that is already in your system. So it's not just a case of adding in iron supplements, adding in more iron foods. You need to make sure that that iron utilization piece is happening as well. And that's where copper comes in. So, you know, you have beautiful foods like liver. And I know it's not to everyone's taste, but yeah. if you like liver, that's such a great way to get your iron, get your copper, get your vitamin A, and that it just does the job really quickly. And it's so beneficial for that menstrual phase where you're losing iron through your blood. And a lot of us aren't necessarily replacing the iron that we lose through our menstrual blood. So that's a kind of first thing to do when you have your period. Then you move out of your period, your hormones are rising. So you have your rising estrogen, FSH is rising, you have the rising testosterone. So you're really thinking about how you're supporting your liver and you're supporting your gut in that hormone detoxification process.
Interesting.
So that's where you're really looking at making sure you're getting enough greens.
Mm.
So those really specific cruciferous vegetables that are so beautiful for supporting phase one, phase two of liver detoxification. And it's so funny talking about detoxification because, again, that's become a bit of a dirty word.
It has. Yeah, a lot of people would hear detox and think, oh my gosh, no.
Yeah, like you're really talking to me about a detox tea. But, you know, when you tell people, well, these are our body's natural processes. And yes, you know, our liver is a detox organ, kidneys, skin, lungs, etc. But we also have to support these organs.
Mm.
It's really mind-blowing to people because, you know, we've just been sold this lie of Kardashian detox lollipops and detox teas. But there's so much that we can do. So these foods like broccoli sprouts, asparagus, kale. So all of these different cruciferous vegetables are so beautiful to add in during this phase because they really support your body's ability to detox and clear these hormones that are rising. And these greens have all the fiber in them so that you're making sure that you're able to have a regular bowel movement. Because I talk about bowel movements all the time and I forget that people can be quite squeamish about them.
Yeah.
Like I just throw up the Bristol Shield chart and it's no big deal. But some of my clients, I see the look on their face like, you're talking about poop now. But you have to, like I say to my clients, you have to be comfortable looking down into the loo after you have a bowel movement, because those bowel movements are a sign of what's happening with your health. So all of this fiber through these vegetables that we've just spoken about is really helpful for your body's process of using, breaking down these hormones, and then clearing them through the bowels.
Mm.
And then when you get onto ovulation, I mean, what you do throughout your cycle affects ovulation, but, you know, really looking at specific nutrients like selenium, like zinc, like omega-3s to support the outer lining of the egg, like zinc to make sure you're producing enough progesterone. Those are really helpful to add in. So selenium, Brazil nuts, yeah, are a great one. Sesame seeds, zinc, those red meat, oysters, shellfish, pumpkin seeds, you know, vitamin D, you're getting that from the sun. You can get that through dairy, through eggs, through mushrooms. So I would say with ovulation, what you eat throughout the cycle really matters, because it's not just, and this is really mind-blowing to a lot of people, where they just think that the egg that we release that cycle gets grown at the beginning of the menstrual cycle. And when you explain, well, actually, it's like a year-long process. That's mind-blowing to a lot of people. And then you go into the luteal phase. And this is where the autumn of your menstrual cycle. And this is where, if you're experiencing cravings, you want to look at, well, what's actually behind those cravings. So we talked about sodium and potassium earlier. We talked about magnesium. And magnesium is a really interesting one, because it's also really beneficial for people who experience premenstrual anxiety, premenstrual depression. So those leafy greens are beautiful to add in, the chard, the kale, the spinach, the seeds, the nuts. But what I really like is, because, you know, we don't get enough magnesium through our food compared to, say, like even 25 years ago. So I love adding in a really good magnesium supplement during this time, because magnesium is like one of those minerals. It's like a spark plug in the body. We run through it so, so quickly. So I think I've read a stat from the US that 75% of the population has some form of magnesium deficiency.
Wow.
Yeah. So when you add it in through a really good supplement, of course, the form of magnesium matters. So we're looking at like glycinate rather than citrate, unless someone has constipation, that can be really, really valuable to add in. So those are the kind of things that I look at during each phase, but you've got to have the foundations there.
Yeah, definitely. And would you recommend to anybody who has a period tracking so that they know sort of what their body's doing in each phase?
Yes, I think that tracking is so beneficial, and you can make this as complex or as simple as you like. So for me, at the point that I'm in, all I do is track day one of my period and the end of my period, because I know what's happening with my body, because I've just been doing this. So, and I have a really good understanding of my body. But when things start to change, that's when I go a little bit deeper. So like giving a personal example, the very first lockdown last March, I found that transition really hard. And I'm being really real for a nutritionist on a podcast. I started eating a lot of sweets, like making cookies, making cakes. And I know that sugar has a really negative effect on my period, and it worsens my period pains. But I use it as a coping mechanism. And by the time last summer rolled around, my period was just a mess.
Wow.
And I knew that I had to kind of dig in a little bit deeper to get things back to a better place. And that's when I started tracking a little bit more. I started to really notice, okay, I'm starting to get premenstrual pain. So 5 days before my period, and then day one and day two of my period are now really bad. So I had that information, and then I could just build on it. So you can go as simple and as complex with tracking as you like, but at the very minimum, know when your period starts, know when it ends, but also have a sense of when ovulation happens for you. And when it comes to ovulation, I say, don't rely on apps to tell you when you're ovulating. Look at the signs of your body. So I mentioned cervical fluid earlier. Notice when that changes from when your period ends towards ovulation, because you will see this change. And that's a sign that your body is producing enough estrogen, because you need estrogen for that change to happen, but it's on its way towards ovulation. Then you might notice that you get like a twinge around ovulation. you might notice that your libido increases as you move towards ovulation. But really look at the physical signs that your body is giving you rather than relying on an app to tell you that you're ovulating.
Yeah. And I noticed you mentioned this idea of sugar, because a lot of people would get around the time of their period and be like, okay, here's my green card to go and comfort eat my way through it. Is that actually counterproductive?
I don't like to demonize sugar, because again, it's this idea that not going into this with a restrictive mindset.
Mm.
But at the same time, you have to be aware that some foods aren't going to make you feel good. Certainly, if you experience a lot of period pain, sugar can contribute to the inflammation that drives period pain. And so for you, you might think, well, I do get painful periods. What happens if I just take out a little bit of the sugar? So make it a real treat like it used to be rather than a daily event. Or use, like right now, we have so many beautiful seasonal fruits. So after dinner, instead of having chocolate or whatever you usually have, could you slice up a pineapple, or could you have a really nice fresh nectarine or peach, because they're beautiful at the moment, or some cherries, and make that your sweet treat instead. Yeah.
So finding alternative ways to go around it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I wanted to finish off, Denise, by discussing your book, because you're currently working on a book that's coming out next year, so you can have a better period. How did this come around?
Yeah, so it was always something that I wanted to do. Ever since I was young, I knew I wanted to write a book. I just didn't know on what. And then when I was studying and then got into actually running my own practice, I kept thinking there's definitely a space for a book that talks about the menstrual cycle, really breaks it down, but also talks about foods that you can add in. Because I mean, I have all of the books on this topic, and there are some that are really kind of high level and very scientific, and then some that don't even talk about food at all. They talk about the menstrual cycle, the four phases, but they don't talk about food. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting to be able to dive deep into the foods that are really, really beneficial for each phase, but then go into specific, like painful periods, heavy periods, missing periods. And I want people to have something that they can just pick up off themselves, dive into, and be able to help themselves and understand their bodies without feeling like they need to have a biology degree.
Mm. Is this the sort of thing that you hope going forwards there will be more education on in schools from a younger age, kind of the power of food around periods and this awareness?
Definitely. I think that food is so powerful. I mean, there is, whether food is medicine or not is debatable. There was a book that came out earlier in the year that said food isn't medicine. And I just had to laugh when I saw that, because I thought, what a Western mindset. But when we understand what's happening to our bodies from an early age, we can be more forgiving to ourselves, and we can give ourselves a little bit of grace to know that what we're experiencing is common, but isn't necessarily normal. And we know what we know is normal. And, you know, when I talk about this a little bit in my book, like this defining what normal is, because there's a lot of stigma around the word normal. But there is a kind of baseline that we can operate from and to say, like, well, actually, this is what we should expect when it comes to our periods. And our period and our menstrual cycle is a vital sign that our body are giving us to tell us if something is right and if something is wrong. And if we can understand what's happening within that, and then we can know that there are changes that we can make, it's much more empowering than just going to the doctor and saying, I have painful periods. And then them saying, well, here's a birth control pill.
Yes. So it's sort of giving people other avenues.
Exactly. To know that there are a lot of things that they can do to help themselves and to just demystify what's happening to their bodies. you know, we have our periods between 23 to 35 days for almost 40 years. So surely when we're having them for that long, surely we have the right to understand what's happening to our bodies and to feel a sense of empowerment around it rather than this sense of fear or defeat.
Absolutely. I love that. I think that's a really nice note to end on, actually. Lanice, would you be up for finishing off with a quick fire round?
Sure.
This is quick fire with Lanice Brothers. Breakfast smoothie or porridge?
Breakfast smoothie.
Salmon or sardines?
Oh God, I love both.
You can only have one.
Sardines.
Watermelon or nectarines?
Nectarine.
Almonds or Brazil nuts?
Almonds.
Matcha or turmeric?
Matcha, 100%.
Lemons or limes?
Lemon.
Raspberries or blueberries?
Blueberries.
And dancing or yoga?
Oh, that's so hard. That is so hard because I'm a yoga teacher, but I love to dance. Okay, probably dancing.
Lovely. That actually is quite a surprising answer, but equally not if anyone's seen Lanice's Instagram. That might not come as a surprise. Lanice, where can people find you if they'd like to either work with you, contact you, follow you on social media?
My website is www.eatlovemove.com. On Instagram, I'm at Eat Love Move. Facebook, it's Eat Love Move Nutrition. So come follow me, say hi, drop me a message. I love to chat. If you'd like to work with me, get in touch. We can have an initial conversation to see if it's a right fit to work together. And of course, you can buy my book next March.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Lanice, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure chatting to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
For more information about nutritional therapy, why not subscribe to Optimum Nutrition Magazine? Visit ION's website, ion.ac.uk/magazine for details. You can also follow us on social media at ION_nutrition.